The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into, oh my gosh, Thursday already. Gary, how are you?
I was doing good until I didn't hit the microphone button. All right, we got a great show.
We do?
Romney says the country is divided as ever under Trump. We'll get to that in just a moment. A former New York Times editor says the news pages are anti-Trump. That's a Sherlock statement. Millennials now find Seinfeld problematic. You and I predicted this a while back.
Yep.
Is Bernie toast? We'll get to that. Plus, his former campaign manager apologizing for being too male and too white.
Oh, okay.
Netflix warns about the Bird Box Challenge. I have not seen the movie. You have?
Yeah, I watched it over the break. I wasn't too impressed, as a lot of people are pretty impressed by this movie. It was okay. I don't know what the excitement was, except for the fact that people are challenging the numbers by Netflix.
Yes, I did see that.
Yeah, so, and I don't know the methodology and frankly don't care. You know what I mean? The number I measure is the 10 or 12 bucks a month I pay, right? Versus the entertainment value I get out of it, which is mostly my grandkids. I don't watch a lot of Netflix. There's a few shows on there, but it's not the majority of Netflix. I don't watch. My kids do.
The best thing you said that related to me was I really don't care, because I was in the middle of reading that story.
Yeah.
And I'm reading that story about how they're doing the ratings and whether they're rating. And I'm about halfway through the story, and I went, I don't care.
Look, for the shareholders, you know, I understand why that's something, because it goes to potential earnings. Subscription levels are the only things really that matter when it comes to earnings. But you can project out certain things. But really, it's all about the current numbers, right? How many subscribers they have. That's your bottom line. So you'll know what's working and what's not. I mean, they made this big deal. This is the way investors do that. They micromanage pretty much every move. But at the end of it, it really is about, okay, how many subscribers we have today? This many subscribers. All right. How much are we paying for content? This much. All right. Where's that net profit margin? Right here. That's all you got to know. I mean, I just think they overthink it, and everybody made a big deal about it. It's not a horrible movie. It's got a couple of surprises in it. You're kind of wondering what's going on. And then at the end, more and more it's revealed. But I think they revealed a couple of the things, keys to the movie, far too soon.
And this is supposedly where there's a monster that you can't look at. So they walk through the, the country blindfolded.
You can't see it.
Right.
So it's this, you know, they don't know what it is, really. And so you have to if you're blindfolded and you don't look, you're fine.
Right. And that's apparently what people are doing. They're doing normal tasks blindfolded,
yes,
and therefore hurting themselves.
Right. Yeah. In fact, all the liberals in the movie lived because they had their head in the sand.
Yeah, exactly. I will tell you about the celebrity deaths, and it's interesting because you don't even have to say any of their names.
Right.
Mean Gene, they're not their real name.
Right.
Mean Gene, Super Dave Osborne, and the Captain.
Yeah, right.
And here's the interesting thing. When they announced that Super Dave Osborne had died and used his name, his last name, Einstein, I think.
Right? Einstein, yeah.
Einstein, yes. And he's Albert Brooks's brother.
Was the older brother of Albert Brooks, yes.
So when they used his original name and said, Curb Your Enthusiasm, I'm like, I have no idea who this guy is.
Yeah.
I didn't know until halfway through the day, and they said, Super Dave Osborne died. And I went, wow,
Super Dave? I mean, that was hilarious back in the day.
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely unbelievable.
Very funny.
And Mean Gene. And it's funny because I really don't pay much attention to professional wrestling, but that is a voice that probably anybody who was what, over the age of 40, would recognize?
Yeah, I think so.
Probably.
Think so. Yeah.
Because it was just his voice so recognizable.
Right.
And the Captain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Daryl Dragon from Captain and Tennille.
Right.
Played with the Beach Boys for years. Theirs is a fascinating story, the Captain and Tennille.
Yeah.
You know, he was playing keyboards. He apparently got the name from the Beach Boys, Brian Wilson, because he wore that captain's hat. And as you said, in our pre-show meeting. The problem with wearing a captain's hat and then being called captain is you always have to wear the captain's
hat. Well, because if that's your name, if that's your professional name, the captain, you can't go out without the hat. You're walking out the door. Hey, where's your hat? Well, yeah. I didn't feel like it today. No. You're the captain. I don't care which captain's hat you wear. You got to wear one of them. But, I mean, they were all over television in the 70s, with primetime television and specials and everything else. And, mm-hmm. Just kind of, and of course, all over the radio during that time.
And too. I still remember their divorce a few years back, that they were getting divorced, and they claimed it was because of health insurance. But nobody was ever clear as to what that meant.
Right, right.
And said they still remain friends. Well, if they just got divorced over health insurance, of course they would. But I still haven't seen anybody ever explain that scenario anywhere as to what happened when it came to their divorce. But massive hits in the 70s.
Just
massive hits. So it was a sad day because it was like, wow.
Right, yeah.
Every time I paid attention and opened up my phone, it was like, oh. Another death.
It was, I mean, basically the younger version of me, it was a pretty big hit, right? All in one day, you know, because each of those people that died, by the way, all of them 76.
Yeah.
So a lot of people pointing that out. But, it was.
In other news, Ann Coulter says Trump will fold on the wall. Mm. Keep your eye on Mitch McConnell. We'll get to that here in just a little bit.
Right.
Thing that caught my eye was the story Romney responded to all the criticism,
right?
And he says the country is more divided as ever under Trump. So
when have we not been divided?
As I looked at you in our pre-show meeting, I said this is so 20 years ago.
Well, and who is it that's creating the heat in this division? Do you have groups of conservatives that are banging on the television personalities' doors of their homes? Do you have groups of conservatives that are yelling people out of a restaurant on a regular basis?
Talk show hosts in hiding?
Right. You have talk show hosts in hiding now because of threats, direct threats. So tell me where that division's coming from. Is Trump a result of that? Or is he the cause of it? We've always said he's a result of the kind of behavior we've been seeing from the left for years.
But whether the country's divided, so that's why we live in a constitutional republic, to handle divisiveness.
Well, if Mitt Romney wants me to stand down from these kind of people that are going to be extreme in people's face, he's got another thing coming. I'm never going to do that.
Divisiveness and being divided, two different separate things, really.
Sure.
But being divided... is Romney seriously that out of touch? Because when I saw that, because normally the term elitism to me is not used a lot when it comes to conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
It's used more when it comes to the liberal elite.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, when I heard that we've been divided more than ever, I went, wow, that's somebody sitting up in their ivory tower.
Right.
Oh, we live in a divided nation and that's what's bad and we need to stop the divided nation. Well, you're not going to stop the divided nation because people disagree. I'm not going to stop being divided from the philosophy of Ocasio-Cortez. Sorry.
Yeah.
I don't want to live in a socialist nation. Oh, well, but I don't. Mitt Romney doesn't want us to be divided. And therefore, I am going to concede all of my values and all of my ideology means nothing because we all need to get along.
Yeah, and it says the guy who used the president for help in getting elected and then weeks later decides to turn on his own party.
Well, and that's the other thing when you talk about somebody's... That was the best that I thought yesterday. I'm so glad you brought that up because I was thinking about that yesterday when it was like he's talking about somebody else's character.
Mm-hmm.
Well, wait a minute. Isn't your character suspect?
Right.
When you criticize somebody, and then when they can help you, mm-hmm. you don't criticize them and you compliment them.
Right.
And as soon as you've used them, then you throw them away and criticize them for what you then believe is for your own political benefit. Isn't that exactly when you talk about character, what we are against?
Because look at the numbers. If Mitt Romney were to run again in that seat. Just if he were 6 years from now, He knows Trump is going to be at the most an outgoing president, hitting his last midterm essentially, and on his way to quite possibly being a lame duck president. So he knows he believes it's clear his usefulness is gone. And I don't know of a bigger punk move than that. I know the strange bedfellows thing in D.C. I know how that works. But my thought is, are you grateful or not? Can you say, here's where I agree with the president, here's where I disagree?
Well, I don't think any of us have a problem. You know, it's what we do for a living.
Right.
is analyze what people are doing and say, right, hey, does it agree with our mindset or doesn't?
Right.
And I have no problem if I agree with somebody or get the support of somebody on one issue and disagree with them on another.
Right.
But it's the entire point that Romney attacked his character.
Yes.
Well, when you attack somebody's character and when you look at your own background of how you have used somebody for your own political purposes and then go after their character,
mm-hmm,
when what you have done then makes your character suspect, is just quite the irony.
Right, yeah. So it was a good enough character to help you win.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Yeah. No, it would be, and he could easily have said, look, there are some international issues and domestic issues where I disagree with the president. And that's what I hope to do in my time in office. Help him accomplish a lot of things where we agree and maybe some areas where we don't agree.
But it's
in the story.
Look, it's this whole stupid thing about, well, we're divided. Well, of course we're divided, yeah, because there are major issues that we disagree on that go to the core of who we are.
Right.
Of who we believe we are as to who the opposite side believes they are. So you're going to be divided. Hey, stupid. The Constitutional Republic was set up to handle divided mindsets,
mm-hmm,
of the citizens of the country. That's why it was set up the way that it was set up, to handle that.
I just find it rich that we have, you know, in the two people that ran against Barack Obama for president in the Republican Party, we have that, you know, willing to... It's the John Boehner syndrome. We don't like messy. It's all messy.
Exactly.
Roll the sleeves up or go home. Or go work for a pot company. So, you know, there's your choices. If you're going to fight, fight. Mitt Romney's decided he's not going to. So here's my question. And this is, since he wrote the piece, or I guess since it was published in the Washington Post, here's my question. What about the people who voted for you? You thank the president for helping you get elected in your state. What about the people who voted for you? Are you telling them now you don't want any part of, if they're supporting this president, you don't want their support? I mean, how does that work? Remember when Jeff Flake said something to the effect of, this is a month or two ago, when he said, you know, now I can say what I really want to say. And we even,
right,
in fact,
right,
we even talked about Mia Love saying something like that.
Yep, yep.
Well, no. You say what you really want to say to get elected. You say how you feel. You say what you believe. And if you get elected, great. If you don't, you don't. But saying that I no longer have to worry about an election or my constituents or what they think is wrong. Because either you're going to serve them or you're not.
Either you're going to be your own person or you're not.
Right.
Either you're going to stand up for what you believe or not. And so, yeah, we criticized Mia Love for that, who we complimented many times in the past. But when she said that, now I can say what I really believe.
Right.
What?
Well, and then so I add that to the whole Mitt Romney thing. What about the people in the state that showed up and said, you know what, if the president supports him, I'm going to give him my support? What about those people? What are they thinking now? Are you in it just for the one term, just for the 6 years? I mean, I really wonder what his phones are doing
well,
in his office.
And the other thing is, we'll get to this here in a little bit, you know, the whole decorum thing.
Mm-hmm.
We need to have decorum.
Yeah.
The reason he was elected was because of that. People got sick of, oh,
there's a lot of decorum, and they're very mannerly. Sure. Listen to Obama lie to us in a very soft tone.
Mm-hmm.
And if you lie to us in a soft tone about our health care, that's okay.
Right.
But it's the tone that matters. If you seem like you're presidential, even if you're not, that's what matters. The imagery matters. And the American people sent a message. We don't give a damn about.
Right.
I almost said another word. We don't give a damn about the decorum.
Right.
We want to get certain things done.
Right.
We don't want to be lied to nicely. Hey, he may lie to us, but he does it in a loud way.
Right. Look, you know, it may not be your style, but the fact of the matter is the American people, enough of them to win an election in 2016, are fed up. They're fed up with people like, like Mitt Romney and the rest of them that are okay with laying down. We'll fight for a month or two leading up to the election day. Well, that didn't work for him in 2012.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. The one thing when Romney yesterday attempting to defend himself, saying that the country is more divided than ever under Trump, as you said, and needs to be made clear again, that reason is not because of Trump.
No.
Trump was elected because that divide existed, and one side of that divide believed that their political party was not fighting hard enough for their interests. End of story.
Yep.
Trump is a result of a divided nation, not the cause of the divided nation. We are divided because we have extreme differences in philosophy with the other side as to how to run the country and how the country should be run.
Right.
And that's where Romney is dead wrong. And there's nothing wrong about being a divided nation. I mean, it's just saying a divided nation is wrong. No, it's reality.
Well, when you look at it, too, if you're going to lay down like a Romney would do and then just play nice, what happens? Well, policies like sanctuary state policies, policies that have in that same state, that say you can spend a year in jail for using the wrong pronoun, those types of policies become the norm because you start saying things like, well, we need to consider people's feelings and be nice.
No. We need to tell the truth.
It's the only thing that matters.
And a ton of people don't want to hear the truth.
No, they don't.
And when you don't want to hear the truth, and some people want the truth, you're going to have a divided nation.
Yep.
You're going to have a divided society because of that. And there's nothing wrong with a divided society. Why? It's the reality of human nature.
Right. They're all over the planet, by the way. For Cobra Electronics, here's your forecast.
A new storm system that developed over the southwest yesterday and headed east has affected a large area of the southern plains and the lower Mississippi Valley today. Snow and freezing rain will fall today across areas of northern and western Texas, with several inches of accumulating snow and concerns about a coating of ice. Travel conditions are likely to become hazardous as a result. Temperatures will be as much as 10 to 20 degrees below normal from the southwest, east out across the southern plains for the next couple of days. Thunderstorms and heavy rains are forecast today from East Texas into Louisiana, Arkansas, Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee, and North Georgia. Tonight into tomorrow, rain and thunderstorms will move into Alabama, the Florida Panhandle, and Georgia across the Carolinas and the Florida Peninsula. Heavy rain in western Washington and some areas of the Olympic Peninsula will see as much as 3 to 5 inches of rain by tonight. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Thanks so much, Christopher. 866-90-RED-EYE.
They never follow the company code of conduct. In fact, it follows them. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
That's true. He's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara.
They write new items in the company code almost weekly based on things we do.
This is going to be one heck of a year. I mean, I just coming out of the break, I nearly spit off my coffee, and you heard me when I started laughing, because I'm just going through different websites, and you know, Real Clear Politics is something that we look at because they have a ton of different, you know, editorials, and the first one I see: misogyny drives Elizabeth Warren's low approval ratings. Peter Beinart, The Atlantic.
Right.
And so it's like, yeah, right.
That's it.
Right. We hate women.
That's right. Wow. Well, I don't know. Is it is it misogyny that drives the governor of New York to say that Biden is the guy in 2020?
It has to be.
Right? Has to be.
Has to be.
Right. Call the governor's office and tell him. That's wrong.
This is again, and I believe the Republicans and the president have had missed opportunities. They have the substance of the issues behind them on a consistent basis. You see a Democrat Party and the left, which still is, their only debate is, as you see here, misogyny, racism. Uh-huh. And it's very easy to defend. Well, no. There are women conservatives and women Republicans I like, so it can't be misogyny. It has to be a disagreement on the issues. Peter Beinart of The Atlantic, you're full of it. Well, and you move on, because if you were truly practicing misogyny, you would disagree with every woman irrespective of their political ideology.
Right.
So it's a dumb thing to write. My point is, it's never been easier to defend conservative principles. Every day it gets easier, and the Republicans still blow it every day.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it misogyny that drove, in 2008, the Democrats to choose Barack Obama over Hillary Clinton to be their nominee?
Actually, from the Hillary supporters.
So how about that's the whole idea, is that you can't just say it's on the right. Oh, you can if you're intellectually dishonest.
Eric and I did a show. There are some shows that we always remember. And we did a show that had to be early in 2008.
Right.
And we said, okay, just because the primary was just heating up between Obama and Hillary Clinton. And it was one of the most memorable shows that we ever, ever, ever did. Because we said the only people that we wish to hear from tonight are Democrats and liberals that support either Hillary Clinton or President Obama. And we want you to tell us why you want one over another.
Right.
And we were blown away.
Yep.
Because it was 5 hours of a show where people would call up Hillary Clinton because we need the first woman.
Right.
No, it needs to be Barack Obama because we need the first man. It was unbelievable that we went the entire show. Nobody stated a particular issue.
Or the first black president. Yeah, for Barack Obama.
What did I say?
The first man.
Oh, the first black man president. Yes.
Yes.
First black president, yes.
I don't know how the other previous presidents identified, so I can't say, you know, I'm not going to I'm not going to take liberties there.
I don't want to do that
in 2019.
Yeah. But we sat there an entire show, we were just blown away.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the show, we said, anybody notice a pattern here?
Right.
Nobody mentioned one issue.
Right. Well,
now,
you had...
One issue was mentioned.
You had Opie, Ron Howard, film director, go on, what was it, about an 8 or 9 minute video. And why he was supporting Barack Obama, didn't talk about qualifications, only about it's time to elect a black president. And I thought to myself, did you support Jesse Jackson when he ran?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, where, again, it always comes back to haunt them. Now, here's the difference. They can write their pieces and everything else about, you know, misogyny or whatever it is, racism. But it's now it's brewing within their own party, their own side, and it's everywhere. Thinking you're immune that you're some kind of intellectual superior by pointing things out or claiming things that are ridiculous, wait until it comes back at you. And it does. Every single day. Every single day. Case in point. The feminist versus the transgenders. So, the people on the left, the ones that are that are truly focused, because we pointed out for years, this is how they think. This is how they think. What you just described, that night we took 5 hours of phone calls and no one talked about qualifications. Only it's time for her, or it's time for a black president. No one talked about their qualities. No one talked about qualifications. What, why they as people? See, if I were, this is, and we pointed out when Ron Howard did the video, man, if I were the candidate, I would have said, well, hold on a second. You know, hey, get Ron Howard on the phone. Hey, Opie, do me a favor. Could you redo that and then talk about some of my qualifications, maybe?
Or some of the things that I believe in.
Because it would be, to me, I don't know how that wouldn't be condescending.
It would be for me.
You know?
It would be for... It's your physical appearance is the only thing that matters to us, or your gender,
yeah.
What you stand for. We could care less what's in your brain, what's in your soul, what's in your heart,
yeah.
What you believe on the issues, your critical thinking skills about how to solve the problems today, your skin color is right, your sex is right. That's
yes,
it.
Exactly.
That's all we care about.
Yeah.
Your sex or your skin color.
Yeah. We don't even
It's about time.
We don't even need to have a debate. You don't need to make any points during a debate. And it was, and it just became this ridiculous nature playing out over and over again. That, Mitt Romney, is how President Trump came to be. That kind of ridiculous behavior by the left that's been going on for a long, long time. You talk about being divisive on things that most people go through their life, their every day-to-day, the routine, whatever it is, and they're not thinking like that. They're walking in and out of the grocery stores. They're going to their office. They're talking to their friends, their neighbors, and they're not thinking in those terms. But when the loudest of them keep repeating those ridiculous things over and over again, expect to get a president that just will walk up to the mic and say, okay, everybody, shut up and quit being stupid.
So there, when I saw that, it was the first headline, I burst out laughing. I'm like, it's not going to change. And by the way, you see where it's going again, mm-hmm. because again, it's misogyny. It's, people don't like Ocasio-Cortez. Why?
Right, right.
Because she's a woman minority.
Mm-hmm.
Racism. The Democrats are going back to it again. Here we go again. The biggest problems you're going to have is racism, sexism, misogyny, and climate change. Those are going to be the issues that we need to solve in the country.
Right.
It's the same during the 8 years of Obama,
right?
When we just said, wow. And you keep looking at the list of what people think are the biggest problems, and race and climate change were at the bottom of the list.
Right.
All the time, they were at the bottom of the list. And we really thought, we said, is that their philosophy? Did they actually think, look, we really shouldn't be talking about anything that people are actually concerned with? If we are able to convince the American public that we care about something, even if it's something that they don't care about, and we care about it deeply, that somehow we can't lose too much.
Right.
If we talk about the issues passionately that Americans don't care about, well, we can't get hurt by doing that.
Yeah.
Was that the philosophy?
Yeah, I guess. It's this struggle for them, this competition, really, to have the world believe that they care more than any other person on the planet. And as that will play out in 2020 on the stage, what that will translate into is each of those candidates on the left is going to have to be more and more aggressive in their hatred for the current president.
I care more about you.
Yeah.
I care more than you do with other people's money.
Right. Exactly. Well, which is saying what? No, think about that. I care about taking from this group because I don't care about them.
Right.
I only care about you. Only if you're poor. Listen, if you're making a decent living, I don't want to talk to you. Go stand somewhere else.
Joe the plumber?
Exactly.
Out of here.
No. At some point, you made enough money, and I don't need your vote. But that's exactly what they look at. You know, they're playing. What are they doing? They're playing the numbers. Do they care about the Dreamers? Nope. They care about having them as voters. They care about having them in a situation where they would be able to legally vote. Yeah. Do they care about their lives? No.
Your calls and comments coming up. If you'd like to get in, we do have a line open, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We go to Kendall in Salt Lake City about Mitt Romney. Kendall, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Yeah, I remember calling you guys when Mitt Romney was running for president against Barack Obama, and I couldn't figure out what the difference between Romney and Obama was, because Romney cares basically Obamacare, and Romney put in some of the most stringent gun control laws in the country when he was governor of Massachusetts. I just wish Romney would become a Democrat, make it official. I'm sick to death of him.
You know, I wonder how long, Kendall, you know, we'll, or how often we might see something like that going into the future, given the current state and how vocal, I guess, people are right now. I don't know about, like, a Jeff Flake, who knows if he's what he's going to do in the future, but it wouldn't shock me at all. In fact, I would probably applaud and go, okay, yeah, of course, if Jeff Flake came out tomorrow and said, I'm going to run for this office as a Democrat, right? And people like, you know, Mitt Romney, who have been moderates. I mean, that goes back to early 2012 when, you know, we had the late Andrew Breitbart on just a few weeks before he passed. And we were asking the question, because it was inevitable he was going to become the nominee, why should conservatives support Mitt Romney? And his answer, you know, Andrew Breitbart's answer, was one that you're going to still hear today. And you would see that probably from people who maybe voted for Trump, wasn't their first guy, but he voted anyway for Trump, or they voted anyway for Trump. And he ends up getting Gorsuch on the bench fairly quickly. And then Kavanaugh and possibly another before he's done, even if he serves only one term. There's that argument to be had, but the fact of the matter is, on many issues, including domestic and foreign policy, I think Mitt Romney was right on a number of things in foreign policy. And really, this isn't about, like, I guess, the ideas necessarily in every case with Mitt Romney. It's about, as you pointed out earlier, Gary, it's about the attack on character coming from a guy who was willing to let the president campaign for him in his state in order to win, and then a few weeks later decides he's going to write this op-ed piece, or he's going to write this opinion piece in the Washington Post and turn on him and attack his character. Look, you can say you disagree with him. I have no problem with it. But it reeks Jeff Flake attitude.
And by the way, and you can attack somebody's character, but the ironic thing is he's attacking somebody's character while letting you know that he has a lack of character, because he was willing to accept the person who he believes lacks character, was willing to accept their endorsement, campaigning, whatever. Just do whatever you do, because I'm going to use your endorsement to win an election, and then I'm going to charge you with having no character. Well, you've just admitted that you'll do anything to win. Isn't that a lack of character?
Well, my question would be, why didn't you write this when you announced you were running? Why didn't you have this published, and why didn't you go out and run on this saying, I disagree with this president, I don't like his character, I don't believe he's moral, whatever you want to say, and run on that, and let's see if you win? He clearly waited until after the election.
Look, every
and his term isn't going to be over until what, 2024?
Every single president is accused of having a lack of character.
Mm-hmm, right.
Every single one.
Sure.
There isn't one president that isn't accused of having a lack of character.
Right.
You know, and you notice as, again, as when he evolved into, well, we're divided as a nation and more divided than ever.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that was the, his follow-up was so dumb yesterday. I mean, it was just dumb.
Well, we're more divided than ever under under Trump.
Well, actually, that's not a true statement. We did have a civil war.
Yes.
That isn't happening at the moment, but it doesn't matter.
Right.
He's not the cause of the the divided nation. We're a divided nation because we disagree. We're always going to be a divided nation. And the reason he was elected was a ton of people on one side thought that they weren't being represented by their party right. That's why he's president.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
So here we go.
What do we got?
Ash Show of the Daily Wire. Move over, friends. Millennials now find Seinfeld problematic.
Yeah, we knew that was
we
coming.
We knew this was coming, did we not?
Yeah. Well, everything from, well, anything that aired in December of 2018 is now problematic.
Remember, they went after Friends.
Yeah.
And now it's Seinfeld in an article for Bustle magazine just before the new year. The writer, Angelica Florio, details 13 jokes from the 9-season show that are unacceptable by today's standards. Mm-hmm. By the way, all right, only 13.
Yeah.
Number one on the list.
Mm?
What do you think is number one on the list?
Not that there's anything wrong with that?
Nope. Soup Nazi.
Oh. Really?
Yes.
I mean, I thought I would make the list, but
what might be the most well-known joke from Seinfeld is one of the most disappointing ones. Maybe in 1995, this is from the actual article. Maybe in 1995, when the episode aired, it felt okay to viewers, but in 2018, when groups of neo-Nazis have become noticeably emboldened, using the term Nazi to label someone as a joke doesn't sit so well anymore.
It doesn't? Did I have that wrong? Wait a minute. Labeling somebody as a Nazi is wrong, is what they're saying?
Yes. Unless they're really a Nazi. By the way, I did see the headline. We'll get to that a little bit later. The Democratic representative that says Trump is like Hitler.
Right.
The second example, and I always thought this would be at the top of the list.
Mm-hmm.
The second example on Florio's list refers to an episode that itself points out how problematic Jerry Seinfeld's character is acting. In the episode with the cigar store Indian.
Oh, yeah.
In which Jerry is trying to date a woman and finds out she's Native American and can't stop using stupid terms that refer to her heritage, like Indian giver, the episode itself points out how terrible Jerry is for doing this.
Okay.
The article also mentions an episode that was controversial when it came out in 1998. Every once in a while, this happens with TV shows. Family Guys have gone through it at other times. But I'll have to get the entire list here because this article doesn't give the entire list, but it uses right. those two examples. Remember, this is when he became so sensitive.
Right.
Because what he did was cigar store Indian that he got, and he was going to give it to Elaine.
Right.
And so remember, they walked into Elaine's apartment. She was having a card game, and he brought it in, and brought the Indian in, and then, you know, took the top, here it is for you.
Mm-hmm.
And he started, you know, tipping it back and forth and going, oh, like that.
Right.
And at that point, one of the women that he wanted to always date was Native American, and he had no idea. Mm-hmm. She gets up and walks out.
Oh, yeah, right.
So then he goes and apologizes, and though she decides to date him. And then remember when he's outside, when she, not date him, but go out to dinner with him, and then she comes outside, and he's looking for, Asian restaurant, whatever.
Right.
So he walks up to the mailman, doesn't know that the mailman is Asian. Because he's got his back and hits me and says, hey, do you know where the Asian, why? Because I'm Asian? And no. And then Kramer comes by because Kramer had gotten the cigar store Indian. They're hanging out the window and he's doing, you know, the old war cry, you know, the stereotypical war cry at that point.
Right.
And I remember thinking when that happened back then, I went, eventually he's going to pay for this. Eventually it's going to come back. And somebody on the left is going to say, you can't do something like that. Then the rest of the episode is he's trying to date her because still she agrees to go out with him. He's trying to be so sensitive. So, of course, he got, they were going to a restaurant. And she said, how did you get in there? That's always packed. He goes, well, because I got a
Right. He was going to say reservation.
Right.
And thought that would be insensitive.
And then afterwards, we're going to the Knicks game. Because she goes, how could you get that? That game's been sold out. Well, I got it on the street from a scout.
Well, it's...
And then it got to the point of where she wanted her TV guide back. And
right.
He basically, what are you, an Indian giver? And that was the...
Was that the same one where he said, I like Asian women? Or was that a different one? And she said, that's racist?
No.
Elaine said, that's racist?
No, that was Donna Chang.
Yeah.
When he got a call from... And remember, Donna Chang, her actual name was Donna Changsky. And she just shortened it to Donna Chang.
Yeah.
And so he thought he was going to, you know, date an Asian woman. And that's when Elaine accused him of racism. He said, how's
it racist if I say I like them?
But again, the whole thing was on political correctness.
Right.
Where it's gone to today. But
yeah. Well, and he was the one years ago that basically, I don't know if he stopped completely doing campuses, but he said it's impossible to do stand up on campuses because there's no way to do it. You can't do comedy without being politically incorrect.
You can't do biting comedy without offending somebody. It's impossible.
Yeah. In today's world, there's really nothing.
Right.
You just need to, frankly, go home. Because at some point, and Letterman said this years ago, at some point I'm going to offend everybody in the audience. So get in line. That's back when Letterman was Letterman.
I've never been offended by a comedian.
No. Somebody telling a joke? No.
I might have said it's bad comedy or it's a dumb joke or when comics have decided I'm going to have an agenda and so my goal is no longer to be funny.
Right.
I've called them out on that, but I've never been offended by a comedian who's doing comedy. I just wonder. We'll never know. We can't know because he's gone. I just wonder what George Carlin would think today.
I think
if George Carlin was alive,
right.
what he would think.
Well, and
what Richard Pryor would think.
Right. Well, Dave Attell and Jeffrey Ross do a thing on, it's basically they've made a series on Netflix of their stand-up. They do those two guys get up on stage at the same time. Jeffrey Ross, he's the roast master, is on all the, you know, I think he produces a lot of the Comedy Central roasts, but he's on, I think, pretty much every one of them. And Dave Attell's been doing stand-up for a long time. But then they do something called bumping mics where they're up there. And so instead of high-fiving or fist bump, when they tell a joke and it's got a, you know, a certain zinger, they'll bump mics. And then, but they, it is both of their styles, of course, with Jeffrey Ross especially. It's all about roasting. He's going to go after you pretty hard, regardless of who, and then he's going to come up and give you a hug. That was kind of the Don Rickles thing, is that everybody said, if you knew the guy off stage, you know he's the biggest sweetheart in the world. Well, they're going to make fun of you, but the jokes that they're telling on their stand-up specials, basically on the series, I'm just saying, and these are, this is done in a club in New York. And people go and they show up knowing what they're going to get. You know, I mean, you see them on the marquee, you're paying to see them do that. And so I wonder, and you and I have been throwing this back and forth, I really wonder how long that particular style of comedy is going to go on.
I wonder when there will be a call, because I do think it will happen in the next 10 years, where there will be boycotts of networks that still carry Friends or still carry Seinfeld.
Right, right,
or
right.
When is, I know produced by the, you know, the Wayans,
mm-hmm.
but In Living Color.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Because that, I forgot what network that's still on, but it's still on, and I'll flick it on once in a while when I flick, I'm like, wow, wow. That could never run. I say that more probably about In Living Color than any other,
right?
Any other comedy thing out there. It's like, wow, can't get it now. Now, would they get the reprieve because they're black?
Well, here's what's interesting. Jamie Foxx was on one of the Joe Rogan podcasts. This was last year, a year before, and they were working. Jamie Foxx was working on a movie where everybody he was casting was going to play a different ethnicity. And Rogan was like, well, I mean, could you make, what was it, Tropic Thunder, the movie Tropic Thunder?
Mm-hmm.
Robert Downey Jr. played a white actor who was wearing blackface and playing his character was an actor, a white guy, happened to be from Australia, but blonde hair, blue eyes, who put on blackface in order to play in this supposed movie that they were shooting. And so that became a, you know, iconic comedy moment because there was a lot of critical praise on that movie. And Rogan asked, you know, Jamie Foxx, could you shoot that movie today? And he says, you know, we're actually working on a movie. I don't know if they ever got it done, where the people that we're casting are going to play different, each of them are going to play a different ethnicity. And I think he said Robert Downey Jr. was one of them, and he was a bit uneasy with the role, knowing the world we live in today, that you're going to be shamed to no end. Fact of the matter is this. If you don't laugh, you're not forced to laugh at anything when it comes to comedy. It's either funny or it's not. That's the only.
Well, in Living Color, the one thing that I hit on it, where I think that it wouldn't matter that, mm-hmm. okay, it's if it's minority produced, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Not when it hits, or would be viewed by the left as homophobic.
Oh, yeah, right.
And that's where they wouldn't be able to get away with it. But mm-hmm. I'm just wondering, when all of these comedy series, right. all of them,
right.
I'm amazed it still hasn't happened yet. You know, you saw the criticism of Friends, but Friends is still, I mean, it's on 27 channels, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Yeah, and it's on Netflix. I mean, you know, right. I mean, it's everywhere.
It's everywhere. Seinfeld is still... Mm-hmm. Is still everywhere, and you just wonder when the left is going to, or someone is going to rise up and say, you know, and start targeting, you know, their advertisers and saying, mm-hmm. this is unacceptable. Mm-hmm. Seinfeld must go away. Friends must go away. In Living Color must go away. All in the Family must go away.
Oh, man, no
The
doubt.
Jeffersons must go away.
Yeah. Well, what was it, Don Rickles thing, Mr. Warmth?
Yeah.
That would never. Try and put that on ABC TV. Go ahead. But it's comedy. You don't have to find it funny. You don't. Because here's the thing. Here's what they miss completely. The comedy lives in the absurdity. Back in the day, the Dean Martin roasts. and Don Rickles getting up there, you know, and the jokes that he made were over the top absurd, well, much like Blazing Saddles, you know, and we've talked about that before. But that absurdity, that's where the comedy lives. That somebody would think that and say something like that in front of all those people or, you know, in that setting or whatever it is.
You're right. I mean, nobody has ever boycotted or asked for a boycott of Blazing Saddles. It's
right.
Still played all over the place.
Right. Again, you don't have to find it funny.
Right.
You know, and you may cringe at a lot of the jokes. I remember Eddie Murphy Raw. I remember being in the theater watching it because it was released in the theater, and it was like, wow. I was, you know, and I grew up on Richard Pryor and Steve Martin, so the language wasn't it. It was just it, you know, which this is how they got the name Raw. It was a little more, it was a lot heavier than what Eddie Murphy had been doing. And you saw it in theaters, and I remember sitting there going, wow.
But if you don't have a sense of humor, as a ton of people on the left do, you don't find humor in the absurdity of things
right.
that a person who doesn't have an agenda
right.
Is. And I've always wondered, well, look, stand-up comedy, you basically know who you're going to see. Why would mm-hmm. you be offended to begin with?
Right. Exactly.
If you're going to a club to see a stand-up comedian,
right.
odds are... odds are there are going to be things and targets that they're going to hit, and many will give messages. Look, Carlin was funny, but there was also a message to Carlin.
Right. Sure.
But the message you could not dictate as being all, because remember, as soon as you pegged him as being a liberal, he went crazy about political correctness. And that's why I wonder what Carlin would think today.
Yeah.
What he would be doing. And who he would be attacking, or would Carlin have backed off and say, look, I apologize, I was wrong,
mm-hmm.
I'm only going to do nice comedy and the weather guy from now on.
Right, exactly.
I don't think so.
I just don't think
that would have happened.
No.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on top issues facing commercial drivers. This month, we're looking at the most critical issues facing drivers this year. And your number one issue, according to the American Transportation Research Institute, is hours of service. Considered too inflexible in some trucking circles, the current hours of service rules might gain increased flexibility next year. One potential change? Splitting up the required 10-hour off-duty rest break in the sleeper berth to provide more flexibility than the current 8-2 split. The ELD mandate in December of 2017 underscores the desire to increase the flexibility in hours of service rules. Earlier this year, FMCSA received more than 4,000 comments from industry stakeholders on proposed changes to four aspects of the hours of service rules. Until those changes occur, consider it business as usual. But stay tuned. Change could be on the way. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome, good morning. Thank you so much for being here. Coming up here, we'll take a look at where we're going. Will the partial shutdown end? I don't believe we're going to see it here in the next week or so. I believe it will go on at least through January. We'll talk a little bit about the get-together yesterday.
Yeah. That was interesting, the back and forth there and what came out of it. And the fact that it was in the Situation Room, I know you're going to make some points on that here coming up, but how that all played out, it was not in front of the cameras like it was before. But certainly there was some, of course, leaks of what happened inside that room and how all that went down. and essentially, I guess, a reset. Let's let Nancy get elected, which will happen later today, as Speaker of the House, and then have her come back. And somebody made the point that as Speaker of, well, someone made the point in one of the articles, it is believed that once she is Speaker, she will be able to negotiate. And I thought, were they just looking to fill space in that article? Of course. What do you mean? Of course. But the president basically saying, okay, everybody, let's reconvene on Friday. So I guess we'll see what happens. But it was a very interesting meeting. And a couple of the things that reportedly happened during that meeting, which took place again in the Situation Room. We'll talk about it coming up.
Provocateurs, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90 Red Eye. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
Ann Coulter saying yesterday she believes the president will cave on his demand for a wall. She said, for one thing, he actually did shut down the government, though don't worry, he will fold in the end. By the way, she did say that the person who actually turned the tide was not her, but it was, and I would agree with her on this. You and I talked about it. It was the Drudge headline that sat on there for over 24 hours. It was, you know, and I'm paraphrasing here, but Trump caves on wall, U.S. to give Mexico $5 billion.
Right, yeah.
That stayed up for 24 hours before. Mm-hmm. This goes back about 2.5 weeks ago. That stayed up for that length of time and just created a tremendous amount of pressure where, remember Sarah Huckabee Sanders stating they didn't need to get the money from Congress, that they could find other ways to get that money. And the president has since that time also talked about the fact that with the money that we save, and he continued with this narrative yesterday, which is just weak for the president to do it, because nobody is talking about Mexico paying for the wall, and the president still seems to be on that every day with some type of mathematical formula that nobody can figure out, that because of the new NAFTA agreement, which is not yet in effect and may never be in effect, we will save enough money so that Mexico ends up paying for the wall. He can't explain it. Nobody else can explain it. And he still keeps pushing that narrative. And I'm telling you, it makes him look weak. And, you know, you and I were talking about the meeting that he had yesterday that wasn't in public.
Right. Where, they held it in the Situation Room.
Yes. And then he had the Department of Homeland Security.
Yeah. The only thing I can gather, Kirstjen Nielsen is there. And they're in that room probably because they're what the point that the president would want her to make. And he apparently turned it over to her fairly early in the meeting to make some points. And then Schumer and Nancy basically just interrupted and didn't want to hear it because they don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear the truth. But it was probably something to do with terrorists coming across our southern border. And that was the point, I think, that the president was trying to get across to a lot of people and during that very public meeting at the White House a couple of weeks ago, is that it's not just about people who are coming here illegally to go to work. It's people who are coming here illegally to go to work, and their work is trying to kill Americans.
Politics is like anything else. You have to sell it. Unfortunately, I believe that this president believes that the number one way to sell everything is on social media. Mm-hmm. And I would disagree with that. I believe that since the very beginning, when it came to illegal immigration, not only because we had talked about over the last couple of weeks, we thought that he should have held a press conference every single day that the Democrats run. Every single day there should have been that he holds
a press conference or a talk to the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And not only is he there, but he brings forth, again, Kirstjen Nielsen.
Mm-hmm.
He brings forth head of the Border Patrol. He brings forth, and he should have been doing that every single day. Over, I don't care whether it's a Christmas vacation. These are things. This is when these things happen. This is when you do it.
Right.
This is when you do it. He should have talked about the fact that we're here. Look at all the people here. I have the Director of Homeland Security. I have the Border Patrol here. We're having discussions here. We're all working very hard. They're out vacationing. Nancy Pelosi is in Hawaii right now. They're not serious about this. We're serious about the security and protecting American citizens each and every day. Now, my secretary will tell you part of the problem that we have and one of the reasons that we need better border security and, in my opinion, the wall. And you bring her forth to talk about the terrorists that have come aboard. But he should have been doing this from the very, very beginning of his presidency, bringing people in, having a press conferences, having because he can get time whenever he wants it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all the networks might not carry it. Yes, they would have. In the very beginning, they're all going to carry it. Trump is news.
They're going to try and fact check him.
Exactly. So you have him, and that's where he brings everybody aboard, and you talk about the problem of illegal immigration. Then you get into sanctuary cities. You bring the police chiefs that agree with you on this. You do a complete marketing campaign over and over and over and over again. That's what you do. You have a consistent message, and you sell it over and over again on the biggest mass medium where you get the most people talking about it and watching it, and that's on television.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Hasn't done it. I'm going to tweet out every day, and that's what really ticks me off. I mean, I'm tired. It ticks me off. And by the way, to make it clear to everybody else, we're not like Ann Coulter. If Trump runs again, I'm going to vote for him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not like a lot of people. There's a lot of people listening right now. You believe you're a bigger Trump supporter than Eric or I are because we have criticized him and quite severely
mm-hmm.
in the past when we feel it's warranted. But I'd vote for him again. Why? Because I'm going to have a binary choice again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have a choice between him and a Democrat. Well, they're nuts. He's eccentric. He doesn't tell the truth all the time. He argues the wrong points, in my opinion, consistently on so many issues. He doesn't communicate right. But so far, I've liked a lot of the stuff that he's done. Nobody is perfect. Not claiming he's perfect. So for a lot of Trump supporters out there, well, if he doesn't do this, I'm not gone. You and I never thought.
No, I think that's what people probably got wrong. And I think we heard from several people during that time when we talked about before the Christmas break. And we were talking about his base abandoning him. We're not talking about what Eric and Gary think. We're talking about the people that were there that were furious. Not us. We've had our positions clear on border security and the wall for a long, long time. I could have a debate about what type of wall or where a wall needs to be. Or, in fact, I think that debate is best held with the people who run the Border Patrol. Again, that goes back to, well, Eric's opinion really doesn't matter. We can have the theoretical discussion all day long. When it comes down to it, the question is, where does he lose his base? And is it something real? Is it short-lived? Is it only a handful, relatively speaking? Is it enough to lose him the election in 2020?
Or
those are things we can't answer.
As we said, there's a part of his base. Remember, after the election, we broke it down into eight different demographics that voted for Trump.
Right.
So his base is actually pretty huge.
Right.
And it's not all-encompassing.
Mm-hmm.
And as we never thought, we said it from the very beginning, he's not going to build a wall and have Mexico pay for it.
No.
And we said that was just as great certainty as we did when Obama said he was going to close down Gitmo, and we said, no, he's not.
Right.
Not going to cut it. Not going to close Gitmo. It's still open today.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't going to happen. We said it wasn't going to happen. We know the things that aren't going to happen, and that they're clear. They're pretty obvious. And we knew, and we got a lot of pushback on it. But guess what? We ended up being right. And if you want to defend the president to say somehow that the new NAFTA is going to pay for it, well, then you're being delusional.
Well, and it's
and that's
it's,
why the president needs to stop that.
And frankly, it's a pointless discussion because it's well within the federal government's role to control the border. It was never necessary to begin with. And once you've lost that, you can move on. No, but nobody needs that to. There are no Ann Coulters of the world that are saying, by golly, if you don't build the wall and make Mexico write the check for it, I'm gone. Right now, it's what? Get the wall done. It falls within the role of the federal government. It's and so that promise you can just move on from. It's your base doesn't care. And the liberals still hate you. So nothing has changed. And so it doesn't have any kind of effective purpose, really. There's no need to. And he, what was it yesterday morning, a couple hours after our show ended? You know, he tweeted again, and not necessary. Stop on that point. Be done with that, because nobody is talking about that. It's either wall or no wall. And your base wants you to fight for the wall. And do that. You're going to have to do that every day, likely between now and the end of next year. At least through the first couple of weeks of November.
When you're talking, you and I in our pre-mid-show meeting, whatever it was, I forgot. It all just is a big blur now.
Right.
But when you were talking about Kirstjen Nielsen, that's when I was like, I could care less about her talking to, you know, them in private. They're not going to listen to her. Mm-hmm. He should have her out in a press conference
and should have had her on
a press conference months ago, years ago. Well, you know, 3 months into their administration, when they got the cabinet set, that's when they should have been talking about border security, and it should have been a consistent thing. He should have been having, the rallies that he holds? Hold town hall meetings instead.
Yep.
Town hall meetings where you bring people in. Forget about the rallies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can do the rallies again when it comes near election time again. Hold town hall meetings. Mm-hmm. The media will cover it. Hold town hall meetings. You hold the town hall meetings. Here are the people right here. We're going to talk about why border security is so important to you. If CNN finally says we're not going to cover this propaganda piece, that's fine. Fox will, and then everybody will still fact check it, and the audio will exist for people out there.
They're going to cover it live or cover it you know, after it's happened one way or the other. They're going to end up covering it. But the base will see that effort being made, and beyond that, 2020 has to be about what is beyond his base. The American people, by and large, agree with him on border control. They do.
There may be nuances.
Right, sure.
Some people, the wall isn't their number one issue, but it may be number three of something they want down the road, or number two or whatever.
If he's showing here's our thinking, here's why we believe a wall will work best. And then have the people, like you said, the boots on the ground, and the Kirstjen Nielsen, all of them up there saying, this is what we're dealing with here. Again, I think the president's effort today was, let's take you in the Situation Room, and we're going to, because you all have clearance here, we're going to talk about something. And of course, it's sensitive in nature about what's going on. But that assumes that Chuck and Nancy care. They don't.
They don't.
They don't. And the president gives them plenty of leeway there.
And so you promote, like I said, in a way of press conferences, town hall meetings, however you wish to do it, set it up, because that's what you do if you want to push an agenda. And then the other thing that you do is you hammer them consistently, as we have said from the very beginning, as they have not done. And this is where you pull in the Republican leadership, and he should have done it from the very beginning, as we've talked about in the past, where you build a coalition of people together to promote the three or four basic issues and pieces of legislation that you want to put forward, and you pound the American public with it day in and day out. You just don't tweet when you're emotional about something when you wake up in the morning.
Well, because it's at this point, especially, it's falling on deaf ears. It's not effective. You can do it in support of everything else, but you've got to get out in front of cameras. You've got to be there can be this nonstop effort again. This has to be part of it between now and the end of 2020.
The biggest failure of the Republicans in Congress, the leadership in Congress, and the administration, has been not to take sanctuary cities and tie it directly into open borders.
Right.
The discussion should have never been wall or no wall. It should have been we want a wall because they want open borders.
Right.
They want open borders, and sanctuary cities and sanctuary states prove that point, because what they're saying is as soon as an illegal immigrant crosses the border, even if they're a criminal, we refuse to cooperate with the federal government to deport them.
Right. Yep.
And at that point,
you believe... That's not a hard sell.
Exactly. It's such a simple sell, and that's why at times I get... I'm not angry. I get frustrated. I get so frustrated because you and I... If you've been a long-time listener to this show, I mean, even before we were Red Eye, mm-hmm. going right. back, because Eric and I have been together... You know, 14 years.
Almost 14 years now.
We've said this in the very, very beginning. It's so frustrating because it's never been easier to
right.
promote the issues that we believe in. And they blow it every time, except they didn't for tax cuts.
And that's exactly what I was going to add. If this president could get tax cuts like that, he can get the wall done.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Coming up following the top of the hour, we'll talk about New York Governor Andrew Cuomo being a misogynist because he believes that former Vice President Joe Biden would be the Democratic Party's most credible candidate. Why not a woman?
That's right, Governor Cuomo.
Misogyny.
You must answer for your comments.
Must answer for that. Another white male?
That's right. With very white teeth.
That's right.
I mean, it is Biden.
I'll never forget that debate with Paul Ryan. He comes up like, look at his teeth.
Wow.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. So, be interesting to see where negotiations go over the next couple of days and what happens tomorrow and
right.
then what happens today and then what happens on Friday. What will the weekend actually bring? Now, the interesting point is still I don't know. And I didn't check all of his tweets yesterday, but still the story from the New York Times from about a week ago that I saw Brett Hume went out over vacation. He was bringing up that New York Times article quite a bit, and they were having discussions on it that the president had already compromised and was ready to go for $2.5 billion.
Right.
President, from what I saw, never responded to that. I haven't seen a story on that.
Let me double check. I think he tweeted something about that yesterday.
Did he? Okay. All right. Because we brought it up yesterday. I noticed the story was from last week. Yeah, so I didn't check every tweet this morning. I'm sorry, I failed my duty. I didn't check every tweet.
At some point, you have to sleep.
Because I expected when that came out initially, and this is going back to late last week, that he would have been all over that, saying, I'm not compromising. That's a fake news story, and I
right.
didn't see that.
Right.
Because the president's usually pretty quick to respond to something like that.
Right.
And it was interesting because, as Brett Hume said, it's really buried at the end of the story of the New York Times story. So, no, can't find anything?
No, there was something embedded in another story, but I'm not sure if it was the president's tweet or somebody else's about the 2.5.
Okay. Or whether that's because that was rejected, though, even remember they had talked about the $2.5 billion over 2 years.
Right.
And Schumer said no to that. And that was at the beginning of the Christmas vacation. So the question that was being asked when that story was out last week, were the New York Times referring to something that had happened 2 weeks before?
Right.
Or was that something that came up last week and that was really never clear? But, you know, when... You know, now that we're entering the new year again, and you're going to hear, you know, you're going to hear all the craziness come about again. But hey, the United States is where we roughly where we expect it to be right now. When mm-hmm. I look at it, a couple of things are better. A couple of things that are better, as we mentioned this before, Supreme Court moving in a way to defend. The, you know, at least moving in the right direction, maybe slower than I'd like to see it, but is still moving in the correct direction. And that's all I can expect. I can't right. be selfish and expect that it's going to change overnight because it's not. Maybe that's not selfish. I can't be too optimistic because it just doesn't work that way. Understanding, you know, the way our legal system and our court system works. But that's a good thing. Tax cuts are good. Don't like it where the deficit is going, but now I've heard that the Democrats are going to try to claim that they care about the deficit, and we saw now Republicans coming out and saying they care about the deficit. So maybe we're back to the point where at least they claim they don't wish to have a deficit or a lot of debt, instead of just not mentioning it the last 2 years.
Ignoring it completely.
Right. At least we're to that point, but that's been going on for a long, 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 long time. Mm-hmm. So the United States right now, are we doomed?
Mm. Oh, we're doomed. We're definitely doomed.
As the Democrats, many Democrats and left, you know, that it's beyond repair. No. Are we going to dissolve as a republic? No. What's our biggest problem? Our biggest problem is what I believe it's always been, and that is our national debt and where that will lead us to. And, of course, the biggest challenge is the economy, and there are a lot of questions on the economy and a lot of uncertainty in the economy and a lot of by the way, the up and down of the stock market, I wish that you and I were doing the show during that point when we weren't on the air.
Mm. Yeah.
I think we had even talked about it before when Wall Street's wondering why is this happening. The economists can't figure it out. We can.
Mm.
Uncertainty.
Sure. I mean, there's a number of things driving. Like yesterday, you had the thing with Apple. We'll see where that goes for trading on later on Thursday. But Apple saying that their sales in China were weak. The iPhone sales were weak in China. Someone made the point that it cost Warren Buffett over $2 billion the drop in their mm-hmm. stock price because Berkshire owns so much of the Apple stock. But there are a number of things there. And really it is about what is that long-term plan for any given corporation, any business.
Right. But I mean, when you saw the fluctuation when we were on vacation is mm-hmm. what I'm specifically talking about here. Right. And we have no idea. Well, yeah, there's massive uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
People don't know what the United States is going to do. We don't know what our government policy is going to be. There right. needs to be more clarity there as to, you know, where we want to go. But overall... You know, as the United States is where I expected it to be. The trade when it comes to Mexico and Canada, except for the steel and aluminum tariffs, which still have to be worked out some way. The president had promised to Mexico and Canada that once they signed the deal, they would be gone. Now he's attempting to use them still for leverage. You haven't seen much response or much talk on that whatsoever. But the new NAFTA is very much like the old NAFTA.
Yeah.
They're not, you know, the vast, vast, vast majority is exactly the same thing. There weren't these monumental changes to even up the trade deficit as the president when he was campaigning and a lot of his supporters wanted. That's not going to happen. The vast majority of it is the same. Once the steel and aluminum tariffs are eventually dropped, which they will have to be dropped, you're going to have an old NAFTA that is very much, the new NAFTA, whether it passes or not, that if it doesn't pass, we'll be back to the old NAFTA if the president doesn't attempt to get rid of that, and that probably would be overridden by Congress because of the possible nightmare scenarios if you got rid of that. But whether you have the old NAFTA or the new NAFTA, it's basically the same. The new NAFTA on a couple of points where it comes to updating because of technology and everything else, I would prefer, in some cases of the new NAFTA, I would prefer it. In some cases with the new NAFTA, I would be against it. But the majority of it, when it comes to tariffs or dairy or timber, was just trimming around the margins. The basic thing is the same. It's not going to change the trade deficit between the two countries. So that in itself, being more that NAFTA was more about opening trade, that the new NAFTA, even if it opened trades a little bit in some areas, mm-hmm. and does it in a few other areas, it's still 95, 96, 97, 98% the exact same as it was before. So the major supply chains are going, and so that's a good thing. And I look at, even if it wasn't what the president had offered, and he tried to make it sound like it was, but it wasn't, because it's not. As you notice, the president really doesn't talk about the trade deficit between Mexico and Canada anymore, because this isn't going to change it. And with China, I actually think that we may be able to make some inroads there to open up a lot more markets than a lot of people in China, a lot of the economists in China want them to do that, because what China's been doing by focusing on exporting instead of developing an economy inside of their own country to service them, many believe it's been a huge mistake of theirs, because as you find out, for example, the United States, most of our GDP is what we sell inside of our country.
Right.
And so if that opens up, that would be a good thing. It's not going to reduce the trade deficit in all likelihood, but the fact that it would be good for both what's good for China, and you're going to find that out. What's good for China is good for the United States. Mm-hmm. We all interact together. The president still talks about trade as if there's only one good portion of trade, but the reality of what they put together in NAFTA, the new NAFTA, really doesn't meet the rhetoric that you have heard from him, which is a good thing. So overall, economy speaking, if the tariffs end up hurting the economy, he's going to have to do something about it, or his decision to or his chances of winning re-election in 2020 go way down. A Republican needs to have a good and vibrant economy.
Well, especially this Republican.
This, yes.
Because if you look at a couple of things, there were things that, first of all, make America great again. That was about the economy. Focusing on, domestic issues, but really it was about the economy. And people were saying what? Well, he's a businessman. He can get in there and straighten it out. They expect him to do that. If we're heading into a slowdown, if we get to where we were in terms of growth during the Obama years, that's not anything you can brag about. The growth up until now was stuff you could brag about and essentially say, let's keep it going. And so you need to undo any of the government moves that you put into play that get in the way of that growth in order for 2020 to happen. And that has to happen in the first couple of quarters here. This is what you're seeing, I think, with some of the analysts saying that the Apple thing is indicative of a slowdown, could be a part of a slowdown, but really they're focusing on more so on Wall Street than they are in stocks. Not so much the growth. Does the GDP numbers, do the GDP numbers in terms of growth need to be revised downward? If you start seeing that kind of activity, that comes from, of course, the collective planning of companies, like you said, uncertainty. And if there's uncertainty, there's less investment.
And I believe the most important person in politics for 2019 in the United States is one of the most boring people in politics in the United States. And that would be Mitch McConnell. I think Mitch McConnell, as the Senate leader, will drive the direction of the country over the next couple of years. Because nothing gets through the Senate without Mitch McConnell. Nothing.
Right.
And as we've said about Mitch McConnell, if you look at it, if you look for the, if you look for, you know, for Kavanaugh, if you look for tax cuts, if you look for two Supreme Court justices, the man who was viewed as the ultimate Mr. Swamp, Mitch McConnell, is the one who did a lot of things, who really was a key person in getting a lot of the things that the president had endorsed and promised through. And he will be the one that will shut the gate on Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer.
Right.
And in a way can act as a buffer for President Trump. Well, don't blame me. It can't get through Mitch McConnell. Can't blame the president. It's not getting through Mitch McConnell. And I think what you're going to see now, you're not going to see a lot get done. Which, when you're not going to see a massive amount of legislation that's made, that can actually be good for the stock market and good for the economy. When you have gridlock can be a good thing. Nothing gets done. There's a consistency of, okay, we now know what to expect over the next couple of years.
Right.
And when it comes to politics over the next couple of years, I believe what you're going to see is the Democrats promoting more free stuff than the Republicans. And I think you're going to see more free stuff, because even the free stuff that they've offered so far doesn't seem to have caught the eye yet of America. That,
right.
Okay, 6,000 here. Okay, will that even happen? So it's going to be interesting to see. And by the way, we're just months away from a lot of the fun.
Sure.
We're 6 months. By the time we get to summertime, we're going to know probably over 10 of the Democrats are going to be running, and we're going to be getting close to the beginning of the primary debates.
Sure.
And then you're going to know the direction of where they're going in, and you're going to be able to see what the difference is, if there is any difference, between a moderate Democrat running, as they will attempt to portray themselves, as to a much more progressive Democrat, and be able to see, really for the first time, where Democrat, because in the primaries you got to take a stand on something, and so we're going to be able to see, because we've asked the Democratic Party over the last 6 years, people have asked, what do they stand for? We can't tell you what they stand for. You're going to be able to see, because they're going to want to win a presidential election. You're probably going to see what some of the narratives on issues of where they stand. You're going to see that here in the next 6 months.
Well, and they're going to have to be very outward about it. You know, the Democrats are going to have to be very clear about what they're, because they're all going to race to promote the bigger gimme, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why if you're Joe Biden, it's not just enough that you have white teeth. You're going to have to walk out there on stage and promise something big.
Implants for all.
That's right.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So here it is, former New York Times editor rips Trump's coverage as biased. Jill Abramson, the veteran journalist who led the newspaper from 2011 to 2014, says the Times has a financial incentive to bash the president and that the imbalance is helping to erode its credibility. Helping.
Causing the erosion.
In a soon-to-be-published book, Merchants of Truth, that casts a skeptical eye on the news business Abramson defends the Times in some ways, but offers some harsh words for her successor. This is Howard Kurtz, by the way, writing this from Fox.
Mm.
Abrams, who was the paper's only female executive editor until her firing, invoked Steve Bannon's slam that in the Trump era, the mainstream media had become the opposition party. Through the new editor, said publicly he didn't want the Times to be the opposition party. The news pages were unmistakably anti-Trump, Abramson writes, adding that she believes the same is true with the Washington Post. Some headlines contained raw opinion, as did some stories that were labeled as news analysis. So what Abramson is saying is the New York Times, in a very nice way, though, in a much nicer way, in the Washington Post, are fake news.
Yeah. That's exactly what she was saying. They do it to boost the subscriptions on the digital end. Wow. For OmniTrax, here's your forecast.
A new storm system that developed over the southwest yesterday and headed east has affected a large area of the southern plains and the lower Mississippi Valley today. Snow and freezing rain will fall today across areas of northern and western Texas, with several inches of accumulating snow and concerns about a coating of ice. Travel conditions are likely to become hazardous as a result. Temperatures will be as much as 10 to 20 degrees below normal from the southwest, east out across the southern plains for the next couple of days. Thunderstorms and heavy rains are forecast today from East Texas into Louisiana, Arkansas, Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee, and North Georgia. Tonight into tomorrow, rain and thunderstorms will move into Alabama, the Florida Panhandle, and Georgia across the Carolinas and the Florida Peninsula. Heavy rain in western Washington and some areas of the Olympic Peninsula will see as much as 3 to 5 inches of rain by tonight. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Thanks so much, Christopher. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Apologize for nothing. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So the president did comment on it yesterday,
yeah.
Then the 2.5.
Yeah, it wasn't on
billion.
Twitter. It was, he had a cabinet meeting, but he was talking about, the story that had come out that said the White House had reached out to the media and floated this idea of providing 2.1 for the wall and then another hundreds of millions more for general border security, which adds up to 2.5. And the president addressed that, quoting from the Hill's version of this story here. The president, quote, no, not 2.5, no. We're asking for 5.6, and that is such a small number.
Okay. Now, he didn't say that they didn't float that last week, though, or the week before.
He didn't address who floated that, or at least it's not quoted in this story. I don't know. So,
then he said, because the part where I was down the hallway and heard you laughing.
Mm-hmm. So they're in this meeting here, and you have the acting AG Whitaker, Matthew Whitaker, and he's praising the president for giving up his holiday vacation. And the president later says, my job would be a lot easier if I just relaxed and enjoyed the presidency like a lot of other people have done. I don't know why I found that funny, but I thought it was funny. There you have it. A number of Republicans, cheering him on here. Lindsey Graham was one of them. He appeared on Fox News last night, several hours ago now, with Sean Hannity saying that he believes that the president doesn't fight for the 5.7. If he doesn't stand his ground and keep insisting on the 5.7, that it's the end of his effect in 2019 and could be effectively the end of his presidency. I don't know that I would go that far. But what he's pointing to, Lindsey Graham, there, I think if you read between the lines, read between what he said and I think it really spells out what you saw in December. We don't know to what extent his base would be forgiving of him, because we talked about it for a few days when they backed away, and then he came back and said, no, we're actually going to do a shutdown. During that time, when Drudge was taunting him with the headline, that became something that, you know, we were talking, all right, if this is your base, you've got to have a reset. And he did the reset by insisting on the shutdown or not going along with, what the House sent over, then Speaker Ryan showing up to the White House, as we know, and the president saying he's not going to sign the bill. So here we are here. If he doesn't fight for the 5.7, keep in mind, this is not the $25 billion. But if he doesn't fight for the $5 billion, he definitely is going to have to deal with the base. I don't know what effect that's going to have ultimately, but it will have some effect.
But here would be the point. Everybody already knows he was ready to concede mm-hmm. 2.5 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. That's why Sarah Huckabee Sanders. That's why you and I had the, remember you that was the morning that you and I mm-hmm. we don't ever remember ever working together as long as we have 14 years mm-hmm. of us ever tweeting back and forth to each other and then actually talking on the phone. And that was after Sarah Huckabee Sanders,
right,
you know, came out and said, well, we really don't need the money from them. We can get it in other ways. And everybody at that point just said, wow, the president just totally and completely collapsed.
Yeah.
And I don't think you would find anybody even from the conservative media that would say that the president did not respond to the criticism that came full force from the pro-wall conservative media.
If that had been Lindsey Graham saying, I don't think the president needs the funding in this bill, he can find the funding somewhere else, that would have been one thing. Sarah Huckabee Sanders saying it is essentially the president saying it.
Yeah, it is the president saying it.
And so that is... because I've heard but she doesn't have, no, she speaks for the president.
Yes.
She is effectively
the White House.
The president. She's talking because they told her exactly what to say. It doesn't vary from that.
Right.
So stop with the excuses.
But that's why I think there would be a bigger impact, is because many believe that he already was ready to concede to Democrats mm-hmm. until he found out that his base didn't want anything to do with it. Now, I think it was it Schumer or I forgot, some Democrat came out and said, oh, see, he pays attention to what. Well, yeah, he does.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, duh,
mm-hmm.
Because that's part of his base. And that's why I responded, because it was so loud. Remember, yeah. Wasn't it Lindsey Graham that gave him a call and said, Mr. President, you've got to stick with this? No, I'm sorry. Mark Meadows.
Yeah. And look, we don't know what was going through the president's mind at that point. Did he feel like he didn't have the Republican support? Because there were stories that were about 10 days before that, when they kept talking about the shutdown, the stories at The Hill and other sources that are essentially implying at that time that the Republicans in the hallways were just freaking out over a shutdown on Capitol Hill. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know. Did the president feel like he didn't have the support of his own party and that it didn't matter and that his base wouldn't care? I have no idea. It's impossible to know what was going on in his brain at that time. Only he could tell you that. But there's no doubt the turnabout within, 72 hours? Became very clear, and the message was sent by his base, and he got the message.
Well, I remember us being on the air that night and saying, where does his presidency go
mm-hmm.
if he doesn't reverse this by the time we're on the air tomorrow? And by the time we came on the air tomorrow,
right,
he had reversed completely.
Right. As we said, you're going to have a reset button. Otherwise,
because it hung out there for a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
It was just pure, as we had mentioned. We said, look at the Drudge headline, and Ann Coulter mentioned it yesterday. It was the Drudge headline
yes.
that changed the president's mind. It was Drudge putting in there, President caves
mm-hmm.
United States to give Mexico $5 billion. And we said, oh, whoa.
Yeah.
That headline, and we the president, and Drudge knows, the president goes through and reads this headline every day.
Mm-hmm.
And a headline does not stay on, rarely stays on the Drudge Report for 24 hours
straight. Right. Now starting, let's see, today's Thursday. Starting today about noon, it'll be all the Golden Globes stuff will be headlines through Monday. But
on Drudge.
Yeah. He's a fan of Hollywood, I guess. I don't know why he does that, but yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I forgot.
He actually had something earlier about it, about, you know, the... Are they doing a Trump-free Globes, all new Globes?
And still no host for the Oscars.
And still no host for the... They can't find anybody to host the Oscars. And frankly, who would you get? Because you kind of have... Whether it's a late-night comedian, a stand-up comedian, a big comedian like a Kevin Hart, who was stand-up and is now, you know, has huge box office, it doesn't matter... You know, you're going to have to tell jokes. You're going to. It could be
Seinfeld.
An actor.
Get Seinfeld to do it.
I mean, but even if it's somebody who's normally not a stand-up comedian, at some point they're going to have to try and deliver some humor, and also they're going to have to bring all of their skeletons from their closets out and go. Everyone in Hollywood that's being considered right now is going to their Twitter page, delete.
But here's the thing when you talk about Hollywood right now. Mm-hmm. They don't want to laugh.
No, they don't.
I don't believe that Hollywood, that the majority from the, and we're talking the left of Hollywood, which is mm-hmm. the majority of Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that they want to even, that their concern is not to have, the unless they're winning one and it will make their career, but... The vast majority of Hollywood is not winning an award. So if you're not up for an award, all you want is this to be a protest against Trump.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. It's a protest against Trump. So it'll be interesting to see if, you know, what will actually happen at the Golden Globes and then at the Oscars. You know, going back here, I just wanted to mention very quickly because we mentioned Jill Abramson and the fact of her new book. And we were reading from Howard Kurtz of Fox News that there's a headline, former New York Times editor rips Trump's coverage as biased.
Mm.
And as it writes in the soon-to-be-published book, Merchants of Truth, that casts a skeptical eye on the news business, Abramson, remember, former editor of the New York Times from 2011 till 2014, defends the Times in some ways, but offers some harsh words for her successor, and Abramson, who was the paper's only female executive editor until her firing, invoked Steve Bannon's slam that the Trump era and that in the Trump era, the mainstream media had become the opposition party.
Hmm.
Though the new editor said publicly he didn't want the Times to be the opposition party. This is a quote. His news pages were unmistakably anti-Trump, Abramson writes, adding that she believes the same is true with the Washington Post. Some headlines contain raw opinion, as did some of the stories that were labeled as news analysis, end of quote. Now, when we talked about this in the last break, I said what she is stating is that the New York Times and the Washington Post engage in fake news. And what's fake news? Fake news is when you claim that a story is news and it's opinion.
Right.
And there you have the former editor, a liberal, Jill Abramson, saying that the New York Times, she didn't use that term, but it's the exact same thing.
Right.
And as we said, that's where it's fake news, where you claim that you're a news story, but you're attempting to promote opinion. Now, we're all about opinion. That's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, sometimes people call the show and say, I like you guys because
because we criticize both parties, they think that we're not biased.
Yeah. You guys aren't biased. Like, we're very, very biased too. Mm-hmm. We have, and the show is about our opinions and your opinions. We're not doing a news show, but I will say this. At times, I believe that when we cover a news story before we give our opinion and say, okay, here's what we think about this story, that when we look at the actual story, that many times we do more of a journalistic job than the mainstream media does.
Well, yeah, because
when they claim their only job is to cover
right,
the news.
Because I think the only way to do that is to have, you know, as many of the facts as you can about any given story before you can air an opinion.
Right. I'm not afraid to give my opinion on the facts of a story.
Right.
What the facts are.
Right. What she, by the way, what she uses there when she says they put opinion pieces in and call it news analysis, we've been pointing that out for years. The new word is analysis. CNN does it all the time. No, just say opinion.
Right.
Analysis means, okay, we're breaking this down. If it's, I don't know, we announced that we're going into, you know, Syria. We're going into Iran. We've decided we're going into Iran. Here's the analysis. Okay, they're going to have this many troops. They're going to start with, or the president or Pentagon announced they're going to do these items and break it down and say this is why they would do this here and do that there. That's analysis.
I was going to say the same thing. Analysis is just breaking down what the facts are.
Right.
It's not giving an opinion.
Right.
And in many times, an analysis now is an opinion.
Exactly.
So they're even perverting that.
Right. Just say opinion. And if you want to write... If you want to have a publication that is mostly opinion, great. Put opinion on it.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to Mark in Indiana. Mark, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hi. Hi, Gary. And hi. I wanted to call it about this government shutdown, that the government wastes easily over $100 billion. And so you guys could really help in just even identifying different stupid things that they spend money on, you know, literally in the billions. That could pay for this wall.
I think most critical thinkers already know that. The president was talking during the day on Wednesday about, you know, what we spend in a month in Afghanistan. He says it's well over $5 billion in 1 month in Afghanistan. And he said, see, we could use that. Now, that's not exactly necessarily true that you're going to, let's say, bring all the troops home, even though we're bringing home half of them. And that you're going to take that money and allocate it somewhere else. Although both are national defense, you can make that point. It certainly fits the same category, but it doesn't necessarily work that way.
Right, because we keep hearing over and over again, well, if we just cut the government waste or do this, we could pay for the wall. It's not about paying for the wall. It's allocating the money for the wall.
Yep.
Congress will not allocate the money for the wall.
Sure.
The money is there.
Right. And $25 billion for the whole wall.
Right.
Is in terms of national defense, if you have the head of the Border Patrol saying this is going to help us tremendously, that's really the only endorsement I need. And $25 billion, again, is a drop in the bucket.
I've spent over 30 years talking about some of the stupid things the government spends their money on. And
something?
Yeah. For all those years of talking about it, America doesn't care.
No.
Our audience, we care, but America doesn't care.
Right.
They don't care about spending anymore.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.